Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
But yeah, that's my hot tip if you're looking for like a dairy-free alternative to the English breakfast.
I feel like it'd be criminal if I didn't ask you how to brew the perfect tea.
Set of actions I did on Steam resulted in it looking like I was money laundering, which resulted in, me no longer having access to a PayPal account.
All right, lads, welcome back to Inside MC podcast. Write it down with an amazing guest. Not really every single week anymore. We took a big break and going forward, it's going to slow down a little bit, but it's fine. It feels weird to be back. I'm really looking forward to it. This is the first podcast of 2025, and I think I'm starting off with a bang. The guests I've got on, we've been talking a little bit before the podcast. They're absolutely amazing, and I'm really looking forward to seeing, I guess, learning more about them today. I'm joined with the amazing Spiffing Brit.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you very much for having me on your wonderful podcast.
How are you today?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. I mean, you know, we're both in the UK, so we can look outside and see that it's been a wonderfully classic January of miserable grey skies and lots of rain. Also biting wind and very cold temperatures. So yeah, standard UK day, I would say.
I guess on the upside, it wasn't as cold today, which was nice. My train did sit in the station for 20 minutes before they eventually cancelled it. So I mean,
Yeah, there was probably some leaves blew on the line somewhere. It's just standard stuff, you know.
Standard Britain.
Yeah.
Before we get into the main chunk of the podcast, I always like to give the introduction for you to let us know who you are. So who are you? What do you do? And if you have a fun fact, it doesn't even have to be about yourself. It's just a fun fact. It can be about yourself. It's completely your choice.
Ooh, okay. Right. So I'm Liz Biffin Britt. I am a YouTuber / content creator. I started making videos probably like 2010s. And then really kind of dug into my channel in 2015. And I've just been making videos ever since. I've now accumulated 4 million subscribers, I think, which is very good. Who knows where that number will be in a few years' time. And I guess a fun fact. Oh my goodness. It's so difficult to be put on the spot and asked for a fun fact.
Apologies. I mean, I can give you my fun fact if you want while you think.
Well, yeah, sure. Give me your fun fact.
It's the same one as I give every podcast because it's one of my favorites for some bizarre reason. Did you know that when they built castles back in the day, they built the staircase going up to the right on purpose so that people who were attacking could only go in single form and they had to have their shield in their right hand, as opposed to when you're going down and defending the castle, you can have your shield in your left hand and attack with your right hand, and you're attacking downwards on single people, and when they eventually pass, they block up the staircase.
That is a fantastic fun fact. And you know, I'm gonna actually flip a medieval fun fact right back at you.
Okay,
so it's medieval times. What is more popular to eat in the UK, potatoes or corn?
Corn.
Trick question. Neither had been discovered yet, as we hadn't gone to the Americas. There you go.
That's a good day. Yeah, there you go. Okay, fair play. I wish I knew that. It would have been great to flip that on you and be like, neither, but I genuinely didn't know. Oh my god.
It's always like one of my favorite weird history facts is when you actually look at like human history, we often associate certain foods with like having always existed in that place. Like Ireland is very synonymous with potatoes, for example. Yeah. However, they've only really had potatoes for like 200 and a bit years. Like they really haven't had, if you compare the rest of Irish history and then the potato period, it's infinitesimally small in comparison. So yeah, that's my fun medieval fact.
I will say, after doing a bit of research on you, and big props to Roman, who helps me do research on guests, so they found a lot about you.
I didn't realize you had private investigators. Jesus.
I do,
terrifying.
Yeah. She's very, very good as well. And she's actually been watching your content for years. So there's a good few things that I know that they've interacted with your content that I didn't actually know. Because obviously I can watch a creator, but I've interviewed so many different people at this point. It's very, very hard to keep up my knowledge with everyone. Whereas they kind of, they're less the interview part, more the give me information part. So it works out. It's a nice little balance.
Yeah, that's very good. I think everyone kind of needs a bit of a researcher assistant. I kind of do all of my own research when it comes to YouTube, and it is quite time consuming, but it is a very fun job, because I think when you do YouTube for this long, you have to kind of love YouTube. And that doesn't just mean loving your own content. That also means being inspired and seeing other people's videos and being like, wow, that's so cool. That makes me want to create something maybe even better, or just completely different. But yeah, it's research is so fun. One of my favorite parts of the job.
Oh no, of course I do as well, but it's just hard to, I mean, you said you've been doing content since 2010. That's 15 years. It's very, very hard to look back. I mean, I've watched you growing up. Like, I've seen your content, but it's very hard to kind of remember and
track. Oh gosh, that's like the first time someone.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment, or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Said that to me. That is actually terrifying.
Really? Oh, God. I don't want to come off as a fanboy now. Sorry.
I'm sorry. We're going to have to cut the podcast now. I can't believe that. Jeez.
I think I've been pretty professional, all things considered. We've had an amazing chat so far.
Well, I mean, you did ask me for my signature, and then you want, like, a selfie.
That was off podcast.
Oh, it was all off podcast.
You're not meant to. You know, you weren't meant to say that. That was between us. I asked you in confidence.
And then you asked me to do sub for sub. Oh, actually, do you even get that reference?
Of course, I get that reference.
Fantastic.
Isn't it like illegal on YouTube to do sub for sub?
No, it's one of those classic things where it's illegal, quote unquote, kind of like how, you know, flushing all of the old people on YouTube. Yeah, like that, or the whole you can't show how much money you make from YouTube on YouTube. But like, for some reason, people think that's going to get your channel banned. Like, no, it's all fine. You can do sub for sub. It's not a good idea, but you can do it.
Yeah, that's right. It kind of just leads to dead subs, which you don't really want at that point.
Exactly.
Technically, I got the follow for follow on Twitter, so I'll take that at least.
You did, yeah. I mean, it was mostly because, you know, we were in an event together, and I really liked the vibe of your avatar, and you seemed chill bean. So I was kind of like, yeah, you know what, why not? I don't think I could follow everyone from that event, because there was like 100 people.
Yeah,
about you, yeah. Yeah, and some of them were brummy. I can't believe it. Jeez. Never catch me doing that.
We didn't actually interact at all during that event. I was quite sad.
Well, I did spend 50% of this charity, like Hunger Games-esque event, sat in a tree.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of realized that when it came to the whole getting attacked by hunters, it just made sense to stay completely stationary, because you had no chance of defeating them, so what was the point? And I just had a lovely time. I went, actually left my PC for about 25 minutes, made myself a cup of tea and came back. Didn't have to get stressed out. It was very chill.
I bribed Bumpy Jake, one of the organizers, into giving me full leather blue armor so that I could blend in as the hunters, for a hunter to see me not run with the bit and then kill me, which is really sad. I was so ready. I had this whole bit planned on stream and they just killed me, and I was like, okay, well, that goes out the window.
What a shame. I did actually, do you remember the hide and seek section of that event?
Yes.
So how did you do in that section? Did you last for a while, or did you get almost immediately nabbed?
I'm trying to think. Hide and seek section was the
It was the final thing. You were dead before. And you didn't get respawned as a ghost.
I did, but like I died.
I see. Wow. Okay. Well, I did really well in that section, because I found the building where they had all of the like credits, and they had all of the like Minecraft models of the actual builders who'd come, like, and the volunteers who'd helped on the map and all of that, and I just stood in the middle of them, looking as if I was one of them, and I kid you not, like 20 different hunters just ran past. It was great. It was fantastic. It was super effective, until eventually someone did finally realize that I definitely did not help construct the map. But I got into like the final, I think, 10 or so. It was very fun.
Jeez. I had this amazing plan to keep one of the hiders alive, and so all of us as ghosts, like, compiled into this one alive person. And then Kel Awesome, I believe it was, pulled out their bow and shot them. I was like, okay, well, that's just really disappointing. Because they couldn't hit them. It was working up until they pulled out the bow. And then it was like, oh, okay, maybe this doesn't work anymore.
I didn't know that was actually a solution. That's pretty smart.
It was like, I mean, I was trying to think of the best bits I could do. I was chilling with Lollipop G. I hope that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
But that was really cool.
Yeah. Mostly just call her Lola because it's much easier for pronunciation.
Yes, they did say to call them that. I did a little bit of an interview on them, but then instead we decided to just build a house in the end, and then we got split up and they did the swap, so it was quite sad.
Oh, I'm glad you had fun with her. Yeah, she's a good egg.
You mentioned how during that event you went off to make tea. So I think it's time we address the elephant in the room. You're a big fan of tea.
I'm a very big fan of tea. Yeah, I've always kind of quite liked a cup of tea. I think there's something very calming about a cup of tea. I don't know about you, but often, you know, when you may be having kind of like a busy day or you've got a lot that you haven't had time to decompartmentalize or think about, a lot going through your head, you can kind of just sit down with a warm cup of tea and it provides such like calming reassurance and almost mental reset. And so, yeah, for not just that reason, but tea just tastes good. It's a lovely addition to my life, and it just kind of made sense to become part of the brand because I just consumed so much of it anyway. Of course, my favorite brand of tea being Yorkshire tea. I don't know about you, what is your favorite brand of tea?
That's a good question. I'm a barista. I work in a coffee
shop. I see.
I kind of
disappointing
just...
but that's fine.
Why is that disappointing?
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Well, I personally really dislike coffee.
I don't like coffee either. I don't drink it.
Oh, do you drink tea?
Yeah, I was about to get into it.
Okay, sorry, I apologize.
No, my
entire opinion on you is now 360, so go for it.
No, I was about to say, I'm a barista, so I work in a coffee shop and there's tea there, and I can't remember what tea brand is. I'll find it tomorrow and I'll shoot you a DM. I'm not going to say on the podcast just in case it somehow leads to where I work. but that tea is quite nice. However, as much as I do like English breakfast tea, I can't really drink cow's milk.
I see.
And with oat milk, it just doesn't really hit the same. So
I agree,
I tend to lean towards peppermint tea quite a lot. Big peppermint tea.
Yeah, I'm actually not a peppermint tea enjoyer, but I do really respect the peppermint pals out there.
Okay, that's good for you.
I hear it's, you know, it's good. It's good for the stomach, I think. It's also quite nice and calming. But yeah, for me personally, I'm just not a big fan of mint, and so peppermint is a big no. I agree with you when it comes to like English breakfast tea with oat milk isn't very good. I found it can be decent with, I think, coconut milk.
Okay.
It's kind of not that bad. And there is also some kind of soy milk, which was designed to go with tea. And whilst it's not as good as like semi-skim milk, in my opinion, it's also not that far off. So yeah, that's my hot tip if you're looking for like a dairy-free alternative to the English breakfast.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's all good.
What is it about Yorkshire tea? Other than the fact that they absolutely love you, as shown by your pin tweet, what is it that you like about Yorkshire tea?
It's kind of a bit of an odd one because Yorkshire tea didn't used to be the kind of powerhouse brand that it is. It really wasn't one of the big, well, it was kind of top five tea brand in the UK, but now I think it's pretty comfortably in like top one or two.
Yeah.
And it mostly just came to me from me having lots of different types of tea. Definitely throughout my life, I've tried all of the different types of tea. There was a period of time I quite like PG tips, but now I just basically can't stand the stuff.
It feels too easy for an answer though. That's why I didn't say it. I feel like it's such an easy cop out to go, I like PG tips.
Well, I think they used to have like a really fun vibe about them. They used to have the whole triangle bags, whereas now they're just all about having normal bags like every other tea company. And I mean, sure, your tea's bad, but I could at least respect you when you had a different bit of branding going for you. Now they're just boring. It's like it's like how all brands kind of become the same after a while.
Yeah.
Just do the same product, which is a shame. same. But yeah, I find Yorkshire tea tastes really, really good. It works really well with at least the type of water I have in my area. And I do like the various different types of Yorkshire tea they do. The bedtime brew is great. Sends me to sleep immediately, basically. The standard red label is just great everyday-to-day stuff. The gold brew is phenomenal.
Favorite, right? The gold one, yep.
I do like the gold brew. It's a bit pricey, but when, you know, you drink, when you want to treat yourself, it's nice. It's really, really good. And then, of course, you've got the wonderful biscuit brew, which I would recommend if you, you know, if you're not used to tea and maybe you're used to sweet coffees, treat yourself to the biscuit brew and suddenly you'll not only be having like a lot less sugar, but it'll taste great. And then you'll be addicted to tea like the rest of us. It's wonderful. Join us. Join the cult.
I feel like it'd be criminal if I didn't ask you how to brew the perfect tea.
Oh my dear. Oh, this is kind of bad question. Mostly because I am in the camp who believes that there are a handful of things you can do wrong to make a cup of tea. However, everyone has their own personal kind of like perfect brew.
Understandable.
But there are some hot tips I can give you. Namely, you want to use a kettle. You want to boil your water in the kettle. So you want to put bag in a mug, add the boiling water. You have to add the boiling water first because if you put the milk in first, you're basically cooling down the tea bag. You're not giving it time to steep. That's the thing. That's the big thing. I know you agree with me because this is a controversial.
I'm sending this podcast to my partner. She does milk first and I've told her it's wrong, and now I actually have a tea enthusiast who can back me. It's great.
Yeah, everyone should know when you just think about it logically. We boil the water so that we can steep leaves inside the tea bag. If you cool that down before it's had time to steep, you are not getting the steeping. You're not getting the flavor from the tea bag. You might as well just be having like hot water and milk in the same mug. The tea bag is wasted. So yeah, I recommend, that's my advice. When it comes to like having sugar in your tea, I think it's best to kind of like alternate between having like some sugar and then having a long period of time without any sugar. Because if you put sugar in your tea every time, your brain just kind of blocks it out. It no longer tastes like a sweet tea. It's just the normal tea. So yeah, I recommend going on rotations when it comes to things like that. But you know, not every tea needs sweetness. I don't really think I've had sugar in tea for about 3 months now. But yeah, just make the brew in the way that feels good for you. I think usually it's like 3 to 5 minutes gives the tea bag enough time to steep. But everyone has their own personal preference.
I have a take on the milk thing as well. It's that, like, how I typically do it is that, like, the reason I put milk last is so I can determine how hot I want the tea. If you're putting the milk first, you can't really choose how hot your tea is going to be. If you put the hot water first and you put milk in and then it's still too hot, you can pour it out and put more milk in. But if you do it the other way around, it's a little bit awkward because you're not really getting rid of the milk, you're getting rid of the hot water.
I guess I don't really run into this problem because I usually drink my tea really quite hot. I think there's usually about a 3 minute wait between me starting to drink my tea and my wife drinking her tea, just because that's how I like it. I also find when it comes to milk, this is a classical thing that older people will do in the UK, is they'll keep their milk out, kind of like in a little separate holder, kind of like when you go for afternoon tea and they give you that little pot of milk.
Yeah.
Because it's not come straight out of a fridge, it kind of warms up to room temperature a bit better, so it doesn't mess with the tea as much. You still get that kind of like creamy taste to the tea. So that's another pro tip, but of course that requires a bit of forward planning every time you make a cup of tea, and usually a waste of things to wash up. So yeah, definitely not good for the day-to-day brew.
How did it feel when you got sent the custom package? That's kind of mental, right?
Honestly, one of the best days of my life. Not the best day of my life. That was getting married, of course. But, you know, getting... It's up there. It's closer than I think it should be. No. But yeah, receiving a box of Yorkshire tea with my name on it is actually really cool. Yorkshire Tea as a company aren't that big. They're a subsidiary of Taylors of Harrogate, which is a relatively big company. But the actual staff team of Yorkshire Tea, they're kind of just like one office. And so it's really kind of cute. It's really nice that they took time out of their day to make it happen. They're just a nice bunch of people. The main reason I often get asked by people, like, why don't they sponsor me more? They've sponsored me twice. Both times, they're not exactly high fees, right? I'm not making much money, if anything, from the sponsorships. I'm mostly just doing it for the laugh. And the reason they don't is because it's not really something they do. They're not like a big company that is out here sponsoring huge celebrities. They mostly get by off of the brand power that they already have and the fact that people just like their product, which is often how they end up having big celebrities even without being paid. We'll talk about how much they love Yorkshire Tea. I would like to say I was probably one of the first. I don't want to say I'm a trendsetter, but definitely a few steps ahead.
I feel like we've done a lot of tea talk. It's been great, but we should probably talk about you a little bit. I guess we're
sure, technically
talking about you though, right? It's your whole brand.
Yeah, I am. I am tea.
Actually, I do have one more question about tea. Mm-hmm. You can just give me a quick answer for this, and if you want to explain why. If English breakfast tea disappeared forever, what would be your go-to herbal tea?
Go-to herbal tea? Probably a nutmeg tea, I think. I find that works really nicely. There you go.
Thank you. Right, content time.
Content time, yep.
Very, very basic question. How did you get the name Spiffing Brit?
It's kind of a bit of a weird one. I kind of... BBC Radio 4 jazz kind of impression. And I used to play the bass guitar a lot. And so some members in my band at the time were like, oh, you've got a very, very smooth kind of like smooth voice. And because of the way I spoke, people often said, well, you speak very British. Kind of like, I think even though we would use the term kind of like Queen's English, I'm not quite Queen's English spoken. However, I do end relative to where I was at the time, I was definitely a lot more posh sound. And so Brit kind of stuck, and then the bass playing BBC Radio 4 kind of lent towards jazz. And so people used to call me either like smooth or kind of like, I was going to say jazzy, but jazzy isn't right. But what ended up happening was coming up with a name. I already had like a few like online usernames, but the Spiffing Brit stuck because I couldn't really go for the smooth Brit or the jazzy Brit because they kind of felt just wrong. So I went for Spiffing, as I just think it's fun. Also, I was playing a lot of, I think, War Thunder at the time. And of course, when you're flying around in Spitfires, you just can't help but say Spiffing a bunch. So yeah, it stuck after that, and it just works for me. I know there are a few other spiffs online. I was definitely the first, I think, to be called Spiff or to be synonymous with the name Spiff, but there's quite a few others out there, and I think they're all doing quite well for themselves. I'm definitely not the first person to kind of have a brand around being either eccentrically British or being British and playing video games. That would of course go to the legendary Total Biscuit, but here I am nonetheless. I'm up there. I don't have to be at the top. I get no satisfaction from that, but I do get satisfaction from every time a weird British meme gets posted online. Someone often thinks about me or tags me in it, which I really enjoy. It kind of brings me a fair bit of charm.
And what about content creation, and what exactly inspired you 15 years ago now to get into doing YouTube or doing?
Well, I kind of always liked the creative side of YouTube and kind of telling stories. I've always really enjoyed. And just speaking in general. I really enjoyed public speaking whenever I had any opportunities to do it. And it kind of really fostered in me this desire to entertain and be funny. And YouTube is a great way of expressing that. I'd often watch other creators like, say, the Yogscast back in the 2010s and kind of think about how brilliant these funny people were and how they were able to kind of come up with these brilliant ideas inside of video games and get their friends involved and tell these brilliant stories. And I really wanted to do something similar, but of course I lacked the experience and the practice, I'd say, in order to do so. So I'd say between like 2010 and 2015, I definitely made attempts at video making. However, none are kind of like anything close to resembling what I make today. A lot of kind of like GMVs, if you know what they are, and machinimas, I guess.
However, GMVs, I might know if I've seen it. I'm not very good at names.
It's just kind of a catch-all term for like gaming music video. So you kind of get gameplay footage and sync it to music. And that kind of taught me a lot of basic editing. However, I think for me, YouTube, I kind of had a moment where it clicked for me that YouTube is kind of a bit just like economics. It's just a big supply and demand graph. And that was what really kind of kickstarted my rise to power on YouTube, which is what I needed to take my weird side hobby passion project into something that I could actually feel like I could put more time into. And then the more time I put into it, the more I discovered kind of like my love and my passion for this kind of line of work and telling stories and just doing creative things. It really is one of the best jobs in the world. It's not the easiest job in the world, but there's nothing quite like it, I don't think, that is this accessible.
We talked a little bit before recording about like the podcast and like my side of it and stuff like that. I guess one thing that I like, you remember how I said that like there might be something else that comes up on the podcast if I think of it while you speak? This is it. I think one thing as well I love about having guests such as yourself on is like to talk about the long, oh god, I can't really speak, longevity. Thank you very much. It's like speaking about the longevity, like it's absolutely mental that you're now up to what, 4.1 million subscribers. You're still in the scene, you're still actively in the scene as well, still making content. Like that's why I love getting people on like yourself, because it's just insane to talk about how you've been doing content for this short long and you're still so heavily in the scene.
It's impressive. It's difficult. It's really weird to be here, because I think I've seen a lot of friends do YouTube for long periods of time. I'm friends of a lot of people who would self-describe themselves as washed up YouTubers or retired YouTubers. And I think often many people who do content change massively from their initial success, or do various things to keep it fresh or active, or often just kind of take themselves completely separate from the creative process. And you kind of have to do whatever you can to not burn out and to spend some time, looking after yourself and getting inspired, because this is a creative line of work. And if you do the same thing over and over again, it can become monotonous and you never get kind of challenged. And so you never really get inspired in the same way. And without inspiration, I think it's too easy to just either do the same thing over and over again, and that will just burn out your audience and yourself, or to just try and do like a very basic copy of someone else's work. Whereas if you actually kind of still have that passion and you can still be inspired, you just endlessly elevate every single idea that comes into your head and create something really cool and fun. And that makes you want to keep going. Of course, after a while with YouTube, when you kind of do it for a long period of time, you can't do it yourself. I mean, you yourself have someone helping you research. I have kind of like video editors who help me kind of create my videos, because you have to focus on the things you're good at. I appear to be quite good at being funny and talking. And I'm also incredibly good at breaking video games for some reason. I just have a natural ability to find weird bugs and exploits inside of games and abuse these systems.
Not just games though, really. Research, you've kind of delved into real world breaking a little bit as well.
Yeah, I'm no longer allowed a PayPal account. Unfortunately, I've lost, I think, 3 PayPal accounts over the years, but you know, it's okay. Yeah, but kind of like this stage of YouTube for me is about making sure I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and then finding really brilliant people to take along for the ride, almost. Who can elevate what I do. And also, yeah, they're just often quite brilliant people, because I'm never going to be able to be the best at any one thing. This is kind of the perspective I have for YouTube. Like, you could be the best, you could be really good at playing Minecraft, or maybe the best at playing Minecraft, but 2 months down the line, you're not going to be the best. Someone else will be even better than you. You could be the best video editor, or feel like you're the best video editor, but there's always going to be someone next year who's going to come along and be better. So often you shouldn't try and just be the best. You should kind of just be unique and have fun. And if it works out, it works out, because there's always someone faster, better, stronger. But there's only kind of like one you, and the combination of all of your attributes and weird eccentricities make something that is unique, that can't be mirrored. There's no one who can be better at being you than yourself.
Exactly.
And yeah, having editors and a team around you, it's just all about making that even stronger.
I found that with Inside MC, because like growing, so I used to do content on Insane Orbits, and like I enjoyed it, but just I stopped enjoying it and I wanted to go down the talking route. And it's incredibly hard to grow a podcast. Like, I feel like that goes without saying. If you're growing just from podcasts, like a lot of people grow and then do the podcast, which is completely fine, but at the same time, like, I've kind of gotten to this stage where I'm happy with what I'm doing, I'm happy with who I talk to, I'm happy with who finds out about it, but at the same time, time, there's always going to be a bigger fish. There's always going to be someone who finds it a lot easier to get guests. There's always someone who's going to get more views, all that kind of jazz. But
yeah,
no one's going to interview people like I do, because that's how I interview and how I talk to people.
Exactly. You've got your own way, and the I guess the main thing is you come into this with a nice idea and a plan, and also the kind of guests you target or find or have access to, as you say, the only you'll be the one who has access to them. Not necessarily everyone does. But you're right, maybe someone else out there is better at networking and they can get Jack Black on a podcast or something, but at the end of the day you might be able to find someone with like 20 subscribers and the funniest perspective ever.
Or I can get the Spiff and Brit. I mean, you know, it works both ways.
Yeah, or you can get weird, crazy British people who just love tea. Yeah, that's true. You could get that.
I've had a good few. Wade Box, we talked about tea on the Wade Box podcast as well. So. he hated it. I tweeted out like a very, very milky, milky tea, and he hates those. So.
Oh, God. Yeah, I hate those too. It's actually, it's almost visually offensive.
Yeah, I that was what I was going for. For him anyway, it's not really for you, but it was fun. Wade Box is great. Something that Roman pointed out when I like kind of doing the research was about your 100 Statman video. So I took a little look into myself, and those videos are amazing.
Yep.
Like, what exactly was the idea in making those? Like, how did you... I feel like it's a concept that probably didn't take too much thought to come up with, but essentially, how did you make it that good? I don't know. I feel like I've kind of stumbled over my words there, but you get what I'm saying. How did it come
about? Yeah, it came about in... It was kind of me reaching an epiphany, because at that time, I'd done a lot of time-lapse content. So a lot of my early channel was looking at map games and creating scenarios that I thought would be visually interesting, and then kind of like narrating them with text. Like, I didn't even speak in my early videos. And then after a while, I tried to do comedy videos because I wasn't really having fun doing time lapses, and I found a lot more enjoyment out of comedy videos. And I was really bad at making them, so I was mostly just trying to copy what I thought people wanted to see. And then I had an epiphany that I could kind of do a Let's Play style series, but with a challenge. Now, of course, Let's Play challenge series are really common on this day and age. In fact, they're basically the only form of Let's Play that exists, but back then they were kind of quite rare.
Yeah.
And I just had an idea for, well, often challenges are meant to be super difficult, but what if instead you had kind of like the perfect start, the perfect character, and you basically had God walking on Earth, and you could just track this character's adventure across a world where every single thing they attempt, every stat roll, every roll of the dice, they just pass flawlessly. Because often that's kind of how I want to say that's kind of like how my life it's kind of felt like almost every opportunity or dice roll in my life, things have just worked out in an insane way. And so for me, 100 Statman was kind of my perspective of video games from an idealist point of view. And it was really fun. They are incredibly entertaining videos. And I loved making them. And I still really am very nostalgic for the idea, and I'd love to do more of them. It just always kind of escapes me, because I kind of have this, not necessarily a split audience, but part of my audience expects me to break games. And for that section of my audience, if I were to start a game with an already upgraded character that's completely maxed out, that kind of devalues it. They kind of expect me to take a character from scratch and make them 100 Statman, which, to be fair, I have done in video games, so I've kind of set that precedent myself. So it's made it a bit harder for me to do normal 100 Statman content, because, yeah, I feel like I'd be letting down that side of my audience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get that. When you have like a loyal audience and you have this kind of content that people enjoy, it's, you have to kind of cater to them and cater to what you enjoy at the same time.
Yeah, at the same time though, if I'm having a lot of fun and it's really silly, it doesn't really matter. Like, I am synonymous with breaking games and all of that kind of stuff, but if I'm just experiencing the silliest, funniest thing I've ever had inside of a video game, it doesn't matter that that's not what I normally do, because chances are someone else will find that really funny as well. So I think 100 Statman and that kind of content, it'll come back, but it will come back at a time when I will have a time of my life with it, so who knows.
Some of your like most viewed videos, and I guess like videos that you do quite well of promoting, kind of lie around whole Skyrim and Elder Scrolls like kind of section, as in like your what's it called, what would be like the channel intro is Skyrim exploit the first Skyrim hunters, your most viewed video is Skyrim a perfectly balanced game with no exploits. What is it like, how did you kind of get to a stage of you can learn to exploit a game, that's fine, and it probably takes a lot into it, but how exactly did you go about finding what you found? Was it all you? Did you look on Reddit? Did you have help, or like how did it go about?
It's kind of a mix. I'd say probably about 70% of exploits are kind of like from me. Of course it depends on the game, so newer games chances are it is just me, but for older games like say Skyrim, there was definitely kind of like a lot of existing precedents. I think about probably about 3 of the Skyrim exploits were pretty they were well known online in the right communities. However, definitely I think I made them far more mainstream. Most exploits I find are kind of like either I will just be inside of a video game and I'll just be running numbers and testing stuff and something, but often the best way I think I can find exploits is going on bug reports, because quite often people will experience something weird in the game, not know what it is, and then just put a bug report in. Now the bug report won't be an exploit, it'll often just be I walked into this wall and my character kind of like was propelled backwards. Now on its own that's a completely useless feature, but then potentially I could then work out that going against this wall and being flung in a certain way, if I then rotate my camera I can potentially get under the map, and then maybe being under the map gives me a certain advantage. Often bugs are related to kind of achieving very large negative numbers or very large positive numbers. Those are fantastic. Recently I was playing City Skylines 2 and I found a bug report from someone who was trying to export water out of their city, and they accidentally ended up with like negative 2 billion water being exported. Okay. And I was like, okay, well there's evidently something going wrong here with the numbers. If they can make it a massive negative, that means I can make it a massive positive. And so I just went into the game and basically spent about 6 hours moving pipes around until I found the correct format in order to overflow the game's liquid dynamic system, and it was just making me billions per hour. It was great.
And it was interesting content, and it was a fun find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very fun. Hopefully it will shape up into a good video. Who knows? I hope it will.
I once glitched myself into the wall on Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Wow, you know, that's the first step, you know, that's it. You glitch yourself into a wall, then you'll be discovering that Assassin's Creed Valhalla has a god mode where you can no longer take damage for the rest of the game. You know, it just starts with that, and then it steps up into...
I was getting to that, but now you've ruined it, so whatever, I guess, you know. So, I'm looking forward to getting to that stage in my life in about 7-8 years.
That was also, I think, really enjoyed exploit, because so the exploit in question is one where in this Assassin's Creed game they would have a mini game whereby you kind of be in a cutscene and it would be a drinking game. Now a trick video game developers use is when you're in a cutscene, if it's a live cutscene where your character model is kind of there, they make you invulnerable temporarily. This is to stop you dying whilst a cutscene is happening, because of course that can softlock the game or break the game. So they make the player character immortal. However, if you're then able to escape the cutscene before the piece of code runs to remove the invulnerability from your player character, you can then just be stuck in a state where you can no longer take damage, which is what I did with Assassin's Creed. And that kind of trivialized the game a little bit, to say the least. But it was good fun.
See, I don't know. It's a bit like, it's like FIFA, though. Have you ever played FIFA before?
I have not really played much FIFA, no. I'm not against football. I enjoy watching football every now and again, like everyone else in the UK. But FIFA is just not my cup of tea at all.
It's not mine anymore. But when I did play, like, I found it really hard to play when, like, you'd play career mode, you'd make your person completely OP, and you'd play on, like, easy mode, so you're scoring about 50, 60 goals a game. As much as it was, like, cool to break, at the same time, also, like, 2 or 3 games, I got bored of it. I think, I don't know, yeah. Like, I can understand the fun and the silly side of being overpowered and unkillable. But then I see the side of it like, it kind of takes away from the whole, I kind of play games for the,
the challenge, I guess, or
yeah,
the journey?
Yeah, challenge, yeah. I was going to say threat for some bizarre reason, but yeah, challenge works.
It would
be cool to be able to play the full game without dying. So it's kind of double-edged sword.
It depends what you want to get out of a video game at the end of the day. Not everyone's going to watching exploits, not everyone's going to enjoy using exploits, but some people love it. I think for me, it just kind of fits my perspective and how I enjoy playing games. It just naturally comes to me that I like breaking them. However, I do agree it is important for me to often have played a game through first without exploiting it, so I kind of have like a nice baseline experience, and then that way I kind of feel rewarded out of going on some kind of silly power trip. Exploits are of course about not overburning yourself, because often I reach a point with Skyrim where I have a character that, you know, statistically can't die. It can't take any more damage, and everything it hits dies in one hit. Now, I could continue playing with that character and finish the entire game, but that's just not a good idea. I wouldn't get anything out of it. So I don't. I just don't. Instead, if I want a challenge, I will probably run a bunch of mods that patch out all the known exploits and give myself a really difficult run of Skyrim. And I get a lot of satisfaction out of that. I think, a little balance is good in life.
When you started off your content career, you made a lot, your oldest videos on the Spiff and Brit channel, I should say, is a lot of Stellaris. Have I pronounced that right?
Stellaris.
Oh, I did pronounce it right. Okay, Stellaris. What was it about that game that kind of hooked you to kind of build your channel off of?
It was popular at the time, and there were hardly any other careers. I mean, I like sci-fi, I really do, and it's a nice sci-fi strategy game, but at the time, very much, I was kind of looking at any opportunity to grow my channel, and so I was kind of targeting either games that were newer or games that had a high demand for viewership but very low supply of content, and that was one of the main reasons why I was able to kind of get off the starting block with YouTube.
But you also did little other videos like the World War II war stories.
Did a lot of Hearts of Iron 4, which is a World War II simulation game and strategy game. European Versalis as well. Basically a lot of Paradox Interactive games, because back then there's a very high demand for those videos, but not as many Paradox Interactive creators. I think there's probably about 5 times as many Paradox Interactive creators these days, and most of them come from COVID, that kind of generation of content creators.
What are some of your favorite videos, and like it doesn't even have to be a video that got loads of views, like what is just one of your favorite videos to make or do?
I only like videos that get loads of views. They're the only thing that keeps my ego.
That can be your answer too, though. That's completely fine.
No, I think I really enjoy Six video, where I managed to beat the game without settling a city, which I really, really enjoy, because the game is all about researching and expanding your empire and all of that. And the first action you are meant to do in the game is click the settle city button, and I just don't. And I still somehow manage to win the game, which I really just enjoy that kind of video, because it is kind of an exploit, but it's mostly thinking outside the box. And I think there's something very satisfying about an out-of-the-box solution. It's kind of like a plot twist inside of a story, but the difference is it's a plot twist I came up with.
Have you ever played Choo Choo Charles?
Choo Choo Charles, is that it's a horror game, isn't it?
Yeah, about the train. There's an exploit. They kind of bugged the game files, but there's a video of someone beating the game without the, like, so when you spoiler alert, when you play the dude you start with, he dies like within the first 5 minutes of the game. There's a way you can keep him alive and still beat the game. Exploit game files a little bit.
Well, exploiting game files, that's slightly too cheaty for me. I've done it a couple of times, but I much prefer kind of like the Dark Souls version, where if you kind of like position yourself in certain places, you can just bypass entire boss fights, which I find to be quite fun. Not that I really enjoy Souls-like games that much, you know, still.
Well, you should look into it, see if you can find another exploit on that, so I can use it.
I am not playing Choo Choo Charles. Look, there's just something about those kinds of games. It's not that I have anything against them. It's that I don't necessarily like the audience that comes along when I cover those games.
That's fair. No, I get that.
So I'm never going to mess with it, because at the end of the day, the vast majority of my channel is kind of like things I find interest. And often it's, you know, messing about in a game like RimWorld. And I think the audience that would enjoy Choo Choo Charles and Five Nights at Freddy's aren't going to get the same kick out of watching me play Civilization 6 for 8 hours.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah. So I played TCG Card Shop Simulator. Absolutely loved that game as well.
That was good fun. I did enjoy it.
The only issue is with that game is I, for some reason, lost my file, so I can never touch it again. I got so far ahead and I must have accidentally saved over it, and I'm heartbroken. So
it's really slow progression. So yeah.
Yeah.
Oh dear. That is a shame.
Kind of moving away from the whole breaking game specifically then. I wanted to move into the whole breaking real world stuff. So you mentioned a little bit earlier how you're banned from using PayPal. If you're open to, care to explain?
I can't explain completely, but basically a set of actions I did on Steam resulted in it looking like I was money laundering, which resulted in me no longer having access to a PayPal account. And it wasn't even just like one PayPal account being removed. It is anything that had my name or passport attached to it, any form of like my ID, all of those accounts were destroyed. Evidently I upset someone. And then whenever I try and make a new account, I just can't. And they still have about $800 of my money somewhere that I guess I'm never getting back. Because it's been probably about 5 years, maybe even six.
I mean, from experience, I know that apparently if you after like a year and a half, they open up your account to be able to withdraw the money and then they block it again.
Yep, that hasn't happened. Oh, I don't know who I annoyed, but not happened.
You bought every cucumber on the Steam market. I am cheating and looking at your most popular video here, but still.
Well, yeah, it's one of my most popular. It's very fun to do. It's basically kind of a trick against AI traders that exist on the Steam marketplace. Basically, it's kind of a holdover from things like TF2 and Counter-Strike. With the amount of people that are trading on the Steam marketplace, you have these AI trading algorithms that are set up to notice when products are massively increasing in price and then trying to grab a hold of the supply if the price is expected to keep rising, which is basically what we did. We manipulated the price of cucumbers, and then I was able to sell a cucumber for like, I know, 10 times more than it was meant to be or something silly like that. I think I sold something that I bought for 3p for about £6, which, you know, I mean, you're not going to go home for a £6 paycheck, but it's mostly just a proof of concept of something that's very silly.
I mean, it proves inflation, right? The whole buying stuff, selling at a higher price.
It's kind of like arbitrage, is how I'd see it. Although arbitrage is a little bit different. We messed about with arbitrage when it came to cryptocurrencies and the crypto craze, but we never made a video on it because it was, it just felt a bit unethical and weird, because you're basically just scamming bots. But at the same time, someone's money is out there, and also, you know, 50% of crypto is basically financial crime. So
clued up on it all though, aren't you? Like, it's mental.
I just like messing about with stuff that have a lot of problems with them or very obvious loopholes. If something's popular and people don't understand it, then unfortunately there's ways to get yourself ahead, and then when you're ahead, you're kind of in a position of power to do either maybe something good or something bad, and in my case it's always something silly.
Over the years you've done a lot of content regarding YouTube and YouTube algorithm. One that I actually genuinely know, and this isn't just because I'm currently looking at your popular videos, was the watching the YouTube video on 0.5 speed. I remember when that first came out, it was mental. I watched it a few times for some bizarre reason, but I remember it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the additional watch time.
No worries. But one that Roman sent me, and I don't know what video is, apologies, was apparently you asked people to comment cryptocurrency words in order to draw in cryptocurrency ads to break AdSense.
Yes. So don't know how much experience you have with kind of like RPM and CPM rates on YouTube.
I know a bit about it, I'm not crazy, not as much as you do or like any massive creator, but I know enough to kind of earn me money, essentially.
Cool. So TLDR, I guess, different countries are worth different amounts of money. So a viewer from India is worth a lot less than a viewer from the US. The ideal viewer is a American woman, probably in her 30s, who is really interested in finance and traveling.
Okay.
Those are generally the highest paying viewers. Now, the reason it's viewers and not creators is because when Google is assigning ads, it's assigning it based off of you, the viewer, and what you're interested in. So if you've shown interest in, say, finance, or you've shown interest in travel, then you're going to get those adverts shown on videos that you watch. Now, as the creator whose videos those adverts are being played on, if the person watching my content is, from YouTube's perspective, into finance and travel, then those ads will play. And those ads pay a lot higher than your mobile game ads. I think like the average CPM on YouTube is about $4, I think. I mean, of course, that's not the CPM that I get because my space is slightly different. But the CPM for, I think, finance people and holiday people, like if you're in the summer, holiday CPM, I think, can go up to about $85, which is $85 per 1,000 views. And then for finance, it can go even higher, depending on what the current financial trend is. So basically, the logic of the exploit was get people talking about cryptocurrency in the comment section. And even though they're not interested in cryptocurrency, really, those cryptocurrency adverts play on my video instead of a gaming advert. So that viewer is then giving me more money, which was the point of the exploit.
It worked. I mean, Roman commented, they said, they mentioned that they commented underneath it, and I'm pretty sure, I mean, you'll know more, that it did work for AdSense.
Yeah, it worked. Basically, each view we had for a short period of time after that was about 50 to 100% more valuable than the exact same period we had before. And we deliberately did it kind of in, I think, a few quiet months, not like December where the ad rates go crazy. So yeah, it was a pretty clear-cut experiment for us. I think the best financial advice we can give is that every YouTuber should probably do one like finance themed video or like shopping themed video every month just to really min-max the ads getting shown on your channel. But of course, yeah, it's not really something we'd bother doing.
I actually had a really weird occurrence happen back in June. I'm trying to find a video. I found a DM to someone. It was this one. So I uploaded a video back in June 2nd called Do All Minecraft Event Players Think the Same? It now has 7.2k views. I think it's this video. I could be wrong. Yeah, for some bizarre reason, I don't know why I did it. It's a 44-minute video. It had a... I don't know if it still has. So its current CPM is £9.47.
Yeah.
But for the first, like, 4 days of uploading, like, 2.9k views had a CPM of £20.99.
Yeah.
And then, but now, like, that video from 7.3k views is only £31. Like, obviously, it doesn't really get the views anymore. I don't really understand why that video randomly had such a high CPM as opposed to all the videos around it. I really do anything different.
Here's an idea, and I don't know about the timing, but did you potentially did that video come out a similar time to, say, adverts being run for the Minecraft movie?
I was getting, I think it was around about this time, seeing Opera GX ads, but Minecraft creators.
Okay, I think then that could potentially be it, because it'll be some kind of high-paying ad campaign. So it'll be some company that has a larger budget, like, say, your Coca-Colas or your film trailer companies,
yeah.
And they will just pay higher. Considering it is that concise over a handful of days, it will just be probably a film trailer running that, for some reason, your target demographic was the target demographic. So probably, you know, people in their 20s who are interested in Minecraft and gaming.
Yeah, the CPM on... Okay, so this is... So the CPM kind of averaged around like a decent bit, right? So after random £20.97 on the 2nd of June, it kind of went back down to 5. But then randomly, looking here, on the 3rd of October, it had £134 CPM. But no one watched on that day, so I didn't get the £134, sadly.
Oh, that's strange.
So random.
You should have had 1,000 people watch. Yeah, I think on that end, it's just a statistical error.
I think that one was probably... I think August was about the Minecraft ad thing, so maybe that one adds up. I don't really know. But yeah, no, I thought it was funny to bring up how I just randomly had a video that had such high CPM and I just couldn't explain it.
Yeah, no, it happens. It's really fun. Usually I find it's around summertime. That's where you'll see events like that happen.
And December as well is quite good for, as you mentioned, for revenue.
Oh, December is great. We love December.
Because the advertisers are just pumping out the money that they have left over from the year, right?
Yeah, basically. It's the mad... everyone wants to advertise a product. or a sale in December or November as well because of Black Friday. And because so many advertisers want to advertise, they have quotas for the amount of views they want to reach. Now, because there's so much competition, YouTube then has to go, we only, you know, if you want to get a million eyes on this thing, we've got another guy who also wants a million eyes on this thing. You're going to have to pay more so that we can guarantee you those views. And so the client then has to pay more to get the same amount of views as they used to. And as YouTube gives us a percentage of the ad revenue, that means we get more as well. So yeah, that's why December and November is so good.
Yeah.
That was lovely and enthusiastic.
Your two most recent videos, to kind of just give us, ignoring, sorry, the trapped in the house, we're forgetting that one exists, apologies. The two most recent YouTube specific videos, 4 weeks ago, Operation Break YouTube, this video was self-destruct, and 10 days ago, from recording this, is YouTube algorithm really broken? For anyone who hasn't had a chance to watch those yet, and I do fully recommend going and watching them after this podcast, can we get a little TLDR as their more recent videos as to what they're about?
So it's all about manipulating the watch time statistic on YouTube by having a kind of like a longer video be cut down in size, and then what you end up with is the average length of time that the video has been watched for, because it's already been up for some time, is often longer or the same as the current size of the video because you've just cut it down. And then on the back end of YouTube, that means that the kind of analytics that YouTube use to recommend a video get messed with, because they're often seeing how much a video is viewed for and using that as a metric for how much something should be promoted or pushed. So the video basically did incredibly well as a result. It became like our most viewed video of the year, though we uploaded it on the 28th of December. It's probably going to be the most viewed video on my channel by the end of this year, I guess. It's definitely on track for that. And it's entirely down to the fact that it had a level of scarcity that this video was going to be cut in half after a set amount of time. And then also just insane amounts of interaction. Like, it does just have a huge amount of likes and comments. But one of the reasons why it does so well is because it's just different. There's nothing else like it on YouTube, because why on earth would anyone, why on earth would anyone do this?
It's an original concept and content, it kind of gets pushed more.
Yeah, definitely.
Is that what you're saying?
Definitely.
Like, kind of block,
yeah, that's what
it down
saying,
a little,
yeah,
bit.
Yeah. It was just a fun little experiment. I'm glad it paid off as well as it did, because it was something we'd kind of been planning and had done some tests on. But even when we do tests on smaller scales of our YouTube exploits, when we eventually almost release them to the public like this, you never fully know whether something's going to break or get better with having a larger sample size. And in this case, it was very much it gets a lot better with a larger sample size.
Have you seen that one? I'm saying have you, as if you definitely have. You definitely have seen it. That one video where, like, the views update to constantly match. Like, the video update is based on the views or something.
Yes, I have seen that video. The only problem with it is the YouTube backend API is so slow. Well, it's not so slow. It's just, it's not perfect. So it's hard to make those anymore. But it is definitely something I'd actually like to try and do. I always thought about maybe having having one which would be, say, like the channel trailer, where the channel trailer would just update the title to the latest person who subscribed, which I thought would be quite fun. I think there was someone who had a, like, you know, the background banner on your YouTube page.
Yeah.
It'd have it update to the live sub count of the channel every like 5 minutes or so. So I really like messing with the YouTube API. The problem is it's an archaic, messy piece of technology that takes a lot of time to work with. And unfortunately, because so few people use the YouTube API, there's very few guides and even less like resources. So you kind of have to learn a lot of stuff and do a lot of experimenting to get anywhere with it.
The one with that is stuck at 365 views as well.
Oh, that was classic. Oh, I remember those days.
Back in the day, yeah.
It's kind of crazy that YouTube works actually at all, because when you think about it, it's processing so much data and it's sharing so much data. Like, it's storing everything that we put on it, which is ridiculous. Like, there are hundreds of videos on my channel. You have loads of videos. These are long videos with, like, moving footage at 60 FPS, potentially in like 4K, and yet they can just store it all and distribute it all and receive data from everyone watching and assign them ads and recommend them content. It is wild that it even functions.
And it does.
Yeah, it works really well. Really, really well at ByHub.
Something that we haven't gotten into talking about, and it's why we had the timestamp, is you being a member of the Yogscast.
Yeah!
Which is kind of cool, right? Yogscast is pretty cool. I still listen to a lot of their Minecraft music. So, obviously, I kind of know Yogscast more from the Minecraft, but I know they've done a lot more now. Like, I've had Roof, who works with Jingle Jam. They've been on the podcast for back-to-back years, which has been really, really cool. So, I assume you know what Jingle Jam is, all things considered.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, I think for me, Jingle Jam is crazy because I, you know, before I did YouTube, I would watch Jingle Jam, and now here I am on the other side of the camera, basically. And yeah, I think for me, the Yogscast is Jingle Jam. I think as a like network, YouTube networks don't really need to exist anymore. So there isn't really a reason for the Yogscast to exist. And I think there was probably 1 or 2 years where it almost didn't. And luckily, this thing called Jingle Jam exists that not only gives us a reason for the Yogscast to exist, but also a cause for the Yogscast to exist and grow around. I think without something as incredible as the Jingle Jam bringing people together, the Yogscast wouldn't still be here, still making different stuff. I mean, it's very different to what it was back in the day. A whole new cast of characters, a whole new style, whole new games. But at the end of the day, the premise is kind of like, well, the philosophy behind it all is, how do we have fun with our friends inside of video games? And how do we make this then still pay for like a bunch of editors and a building and all of that? So I'm really like impressed by the fact that Lewis and Simon and Rich, the kind of chief exec behind it all, have managed to keep it going for so long. And most importantly, in recent years, they haven't kind of seen, even though the Yogscast might not necessarily be growing, Jingle Jam side of things is, because it is such an incredible thing. It's a charity event where you can give money to charity, but also get games that are donated from developers. And there's nothing else quite like it. And as far as charity events go, it has such a ridiculous kind of like average donation relative to all other creator charity drives that you kind of just want it to keep growing. Because when you sit down and actually speak to another creator and you're like, hey, you should fundraise, and they're like, okay, fine, I'll fundraise, and then you go, and if you fundraise for this, you'll raise like 5 times as much for good causes, then it's kind of a no-brainer. Yeah, I'm excited to see where the Jingle Jam grows, because who knows what it's got in store.
Absolutely mental, and it's so, so cool to see as well. I've loved talking to like Roof about it and being involved in the events, raising money for it, so it's very cool.
It's nice. It's a very open thing. I think as the years go on, more and more creators will get involved, and Jingle Jam becomes less of a, oh, it's just that Yogscast event that happens. And I think the plan is that, given it a few years' time, it'll stop being that, and it'll be the Jingle Jam. It'll be the biggest, coolest charity gaming event of the year that, you know, people want to be involved in and supporting and just endlessly lifting up.
I mean, you raised over 100 grand for the Grand Appeal in 2024.
That's true, yeah, although awkwardly, $40,000 off of raising $1 million across my lifetime of Jingle Jamming. So I've got that awkward thing where I have to do it again. I can't retire from content for at least another year.
God forbid I have to raise money for charity again.
Oh. I know, like, it's the worst. Oh, I can't believe it.
When did you join the Yogscast, by the way?
I joined the Yogscast in 2018. I wanted to join the Yogscast. However, the Yogscast kind of did like an expansion phase in 2017 where they picked up a bunch of Paradox Interactive content creators, like Isaurus Productions, Bacone One, Rimi Down Under Gaming, Alex the Rambler. So they picked up 4 creators all in the same niche, and it's the same niche I was in. And so I was like, oh, well, I also want to join. So I sent a message being like, hey, can I join the network? And they were like, well, we just picked up like 4 of you. So no. Because from an audience perspective, we're all the same. So why on earth would you want to pick up even more? And then after a while, my channel kind of took off, largely thanks to the whole 100 Statman stuff. And so instead of it being like a, oh, you're all the same, it became a, oh, we could be getting 10% of this guy's revenue each month. Okay, right, we should get him involved. And then of course, even though it was kind of like motivated by money, you know, they knew that they were getting someone into the network Network who still really wanted to be there and enjoyed the Yogscast. And I feel like I've added to the Yogscast over the years in my own way, shape or form. And definitely our relationship now is no longer financial. There is no financial reason for me to be in the Yogscast. I get nothing from it other than Jingle Jam, basically, which I don't get anything from. So, other than the taking part and having a voice in the process of Jingle Jam is fun. Being able to say, hey, I'd like to put this on the schedule, or being more involved with the charities is good. Yeah, my relationship with the Yogscast is one where I don't pay them a percentage of my revenue, because that just doesn't make sense.
And also, the fact you're part of the Yogscast is pretty cool.
That's true. That's true. I don't think it's as prestigious as what it used to be in like 2014, but to the certain right people, that's kind of a cool thing, a nice little badge of pride.
It says on your Yogscast wiki that you self-proclaimed that you were added with the sole intent of causing Lewis to have a mental breakdown.
Yeah, and I think I have done that over the years. I have psychologically tortured him in many ways, many shapes and many forms. But it is kind of nice that my relationship with Lewis has changed from being one of kind of just like awe of like, whoa, what a titan of YouTube, to then one of, oh, well, he's a content creator partner like me and we can make good content together. So now it's just basically one of like, you know, we're both well-established creators in our own rights and we're both running our own companies and we're kind of just friends, which is really nice. We go on holiday every once in a while, maybe like once or twice a year, which is fun. He's just a nice egg to hang out with. And he's really into board games, which is good because I love a good board game as well.
Do you know much about MCC?
I know a fair amount, of mostly via Martin's Twitter page, Martin in the Littlewood.
Yes.
And yeah, so that's kind of like my access to MCC. Of course, I see it every once in a while on Twitter when there's drama. Some team said something to another team. Oh my goodness. And someone wasn't invited. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Welcome
so
to
I get that kind
community.
Of stuff. I get that. So from my perspective, MCC appears to be like a very loud event. It seems to be fun and everyone wants to be involved in it, and everyone wants to be involved in it so much that they're willing to get really toxic about it. But I think it's a really cool thing that basically people have come together and found a new way to have fun, and they've I think rightly kind of found that the best way to then grow that fun is by inviting other cool people on board to have fun with it. And it's now got this whole community that kind of exists, you know, semi-independently of Minecraft. It is just its own thing. And yeah, as with all communities, it has its high points, it has its low points, but I think they've done a really cool thing.
What is like, what have you done? Oh, funny.
I ask myself that every day.
I was getting to it. I was about to say funny name reference. I just wanted to like point out that I was about to do this. What have you done inside MC? Like what, like I feel like I've looked through, you did have a video from not too long ago, I believe it's about six months ago. I need you. So like that video, but like what kind of Minecraft content have you really done over the time?
So over the years, we've done the occasional like exploit video in Minecraft. Minecraft isn't really a game we like do too many exploits in, because of course it's a very multiplayer focused game, and so we have to be careful that when we cover an exploit in a game with multiplayer, we don't destroy the multiplayer community, because that can then make people quite upset. So instead, what we're doing at the moment in MC is we're working on a project called Spifftopia, and this is kind of like a very big Minecraft server that we've made. It can have like thousands of players and it just runs seamlessly, is how I describe it. This is entirely because we did a series. We did like about 6 live streams or 8 live streams 4 years ago now, where I asked my friend, like, hey, could you set up a Minecraft server and how many players could we put on it? And we had like 140 players on this server that was being held together by duct tape, basically. And we just ran this like medieval society. And it was really fun, but of course, Minecraft isn't really balanced very well for anything. And the multiplayer is a mess. So we then kind of rewrote a lot of the Minecraft multiplayer netcode, and that has led us to here, because I wanted to have more than 150 people in my medieval Minecraft society. Now that we've got all of the whole server architecture stuff working fine, we're now on to like the gameplay side of things. So we did, the I Need You video was kind of a way for us to do stress tests. We got thousands of people and had them flatten a world in Minecraft. And so by having people do that, we're able to simulate a lot of like PvP, block breaking, hundreds of players in the same chunk. It helps us see how far we can push our server and how we can optimize it even further. And now we're on to the stage where we're balancing a world for 1,000 people in the same Minecraft server, which is, yeah, hopefully going to be a really cool medieval Minecraft world. It's not going to be like normal Minecraft, though, because so many... In Minecraft, you don't need anyone else. You can just go out by yourself, do a whole lone wolf thing on a like a multiplayer server. You could solo speedrun the game. So we're not doing that. We're doing something completely different where, you know, if you did run off into the woods by yourself, you would just starve to death. You do not have the ability to look after yourself. You don't have the knowledge, say, to even craft a pickaxe. You
That's
might just
a
not
sick
have
concept, though.
Yeah, it's really cool, and I'm really interested to see especially how like the economy shapes up, because I love economics. And so I really want an event to happen whereby, because knowledge is limited on the server, it's entirely possible that there'll only be one or two people in the entire world who know how to say craft a hoe. And then if everyone who knows how to craft a hoe is dead, then for an entire session of the server, no one can make any more hoes, which potentially could lead to a catastrophic famine, which would be incredible to watch, because this is also hardcore. Everyone only has one life. If they die, that's it. They're gone. Of course, not me, because, you know, I'm basically like the DM. But yeah, it will really, I think, lead to a lot of really interesting stories. So that's what we're messing about with. And it has cost us a stupid amount of money to make happen. But turns out very expensive, fancy netcode engineers ain't cheap.
Also, if like there's only one person who knows how to make a hoe alive, they practically become like all knowing and all love.
Yeah, but at the same time, they don't know how to potentially grow food. They don't potentially know how to mine. So their one kind of like skill is what they need to use to get by in life, and potentially they need to like work with other players to form some kind of like guild so they can know how to share resources and all of that. Because it's very much it's our version of a medieval society. Because in those societies, you can't have, you know, a lone wolf. Families were quite large, and everyone was kind of doing their own bit to make survival possible.
Sorry if I missed it, by the way, and you mentioned that and it just brushed over my head. And so if you have to repeat yourself here, apologies. So are people going to have to learn how to do it? Are they all going to randomly be assigned a skill?
That would be spoilers, so I'm not saying.
Okay, you didn't say it. Okay, got you.
But
I had a feeling you didn't. I just wanted to apologize in case I did miss it.
I think the way to see it is that for the first, like session, we'd have things be slightly more scripted and controlled by us. So that includes the people who have access to the knowledge and kind of like the formation and the setup of this. But then after we've kind of done that template for a session, that's then when we start seeing the new dispersion of knowledge and abilities around the world. And yeah, because if we threw everyone in and just said, right, it's random, or like you have to do these tasks and then you gain the knowledge, then it would be a bit too gamified, I think, and definitely a bit too chaotic.
Well, with that, unless you have anything else that you wanted to talk about that I haven't asked you about this podcast, do you? Is there anything that we've missed?
I think that's everything. You've covered my entire existence on. I guess, you know, hey, if I do Utopia, would you want to be on the server?
I'd love to. Yeah,
fantastic. I'd love to have you on board and give you some wonderful role.
Thank you. I don't know what it'd be, but I'd happily take up any role to contribute to life and then die in the first day.
Yep, that's how it is. I remember we have kind of like there's one video from a fan who was on the first Spiftopia, their entire life on the first Spiftopia server, which involve, it's like an 11 minute long video. They build a dirt shack and then a zombie comes at them and they try and close the door, but the zombie gets through before the door closes and then kills them.
That's so sad. Like,
that was, I think, like session 5, because we had to have a queue system for people to get in, because thousands of people wanted to get in. They wait 4 weeks to die to a zombie in 10 minutes. I like, that is the exact vibe we're aiming for.
No, I'd absolutely love to join. I mean, it might be hard for me to keep up with it because of everything. But if you do feel like reaching out to me, if I do miss it, I'd happily take part. Thank you.
Fantastic. Love it. Good stuff. Yeah, I think that's everything.
Well, before we do the outro, we do have one or two Twitter questions.
Ooh, okay. Let's smash them out.
There are a few compliment replies, a lot more compliment replies than there are questions. I'm gonna quickly just read those out. So Tay LMIO was shocked. Amelia Bees was shocked. Happy Masterful was a W. Luna Lottle was shocked. Fatty Daddy was very happy with it. Animal Maze thought it was cool. Derpy thought it was cool. Fulham thought it was cool. Bendo was happy that we're back. AJX thought it was huge news. And Shiny Dude said they're spiffing all over the place.
and then there's clean up after that.
Cos the Penguin and Sky were both shocked that you've come on a Minecraft podcast as well. So that explained it. It was not just... But there's a good few replies who are absolutely shocked about the return and about you coming on. So there you go. It's a bit of an ego boost for you there.
definitely makes me feel special, guys.
So, three questions. Oh, no, two questions, though. Okay, the third question was just going to be in a Minecraft podcast. Same game, basically. After about you being their favorite Skyrim YouTuber. But only a question. We'll roll up. The first one is from Mayhaps. I need to know if Magic Denoa actually steals from charities in his free time. I certainly wouldn't be surprised.
I can confirm he steals from charity in the video where he claims to have stolen from charity.
Your mic lagged a little bit there. Sorry, he did steal.
He did not steal from charity. I can confirm. Despite the video being about him stealing from charity, I can confirm he actually did just do a charitable donation and didn't steal.
Okay. Your mic lagged, so it literally said, it sounded like you said he did steal.
Well, that's fine. Leave that in. It adds a bit of a... Who knows?
Ooh, that can go in the highlights. He did steal, and it's just like cuts to like podcast. And then the final one comes from Animal Mace. I'm going to kind of fold this down a little bit just so it doesn't go on for too long. What's the best tea tier list, please? So instead of a tier list,
okay,
I'm going to ask you to rank your top five. Doesn't have to be in order, but if you want to make it in order, it can be. Top five teas.
Yorkshire Tea, Bird and Blend, Tea Pigs, Twinings, and then there is another one. I only visually know it, but as I can't remember it off the top of my head, I'm gonna go for Aldi Red Label. It's a perfectly fine English breakfast tea. That's my top five.
There we go. That's it. That's everything. Oh my god,
we did it.
We did it. We recorded a podcast. Oh my goodness.
Right, how does this outro?
So, just before I do the outro, actually, I always like to give this part for you to promote yourself. For anyone who somehow doesn't know who you are and has enjoyed listening to you yap away for over an hour, where can they find you?
They can find me on my YouTube channel, and I upload a video, hopefully every week, of me breaking a video game or some kind of system. And yep, that's what it is. I hope you have fun, and I enjoy doing what I'm doing, so I'm sure you probably will too.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for coming on. You've been an absolutely amazing guest, and I couldn't have asked for a better return guest, so thank you so much. Do you want to do the outro, or should I?
Oh, I'll let you do the outro. I've spoken for so long, you should do the outro.
Well, with that being said, this has been the Inside MC podcast. Thank you all for listening. Stay safe. Don't eat too much bread. Pieces.
Woo!